Welcome to the Ages of Rock podcast with your hosts, Bill Algy, Dennis Talbot, and Alan Tate. We are three guys who have one thing in common, a love of rock and roll. Our goal is to talk about all things rock. We hope you find this show intriguing, funny, and occasionally highly opinionated. Enjoy.
All righty. We are here with the Ages of Rock podcast. This is episode 368. All three of us are here again, and we are glad to have our friend Christopher Williams from Accept and many other things back with us again. You've been here quite a few times. We love talking to you, and
you guys are always a blast.
You guys got all kinds of shit going on. But first off, I want to say congratulations, Mr. Sir.
Thank you.
You have had a big year, and you got married this year.
Yes, we did.
That's awesome.
September 2nd.
That is awesome. September 3rd is my sister's birthday.
Nice.
That is cool. So, yeah, I saw that you had got married, and then you took a later honeymoon and everything. So I'm glad to see that all take place. So
he's actually just stalking you, Christopher. That's kind of what's happening. And
hey,
we've tried to break him of it, but it's not working. So,
it happens. You know. Hey, who's to say I'm not doing the same?
Christopher is now.
You must be bored.
Christopher is now sitting at his computer. Let me write this down. One second. No, it is good to have you on. Like I said, you've had a busy year. You're like one of those, and I say that about all you Nashville musicians. You never gather any moss. You are moving. You're a Rolling Stones that never stop moving.
Well, you know, there were a few years there where we weren't moving too much, but thankfully those are behind us.
Thank God.
Even during that, you know, I will say there were a handful of bars downtown that are their primary business is food sales. So they were allowed to reopen in probably like late spring, early summer when all that stuff was happening. And fortunately for me, one of the bands that I played with years ago down there needed a drummer and called me up. It's like, all right, cool. Let's go back to work. Let's go play music. You know, and we had the recording set up in our old place. So we were able to work on some music and tunes and email some stuff back and forth. Martin Motnick, the bass player with Accept, he put out an album called Dreamcatcher. And that's actually how we did the drum stuff, you know, was he recorded all the bass tracks at his place, shipped it around via email. I did it at the house. Even the last Accept album was recorded. The drums anyway were recorded in that house a week or two before the shutdown happened. It's a good thing. If you're a musician and you know, you don't have to have the best gear, just if you don't already have some stuff at home, get it started.
Yeah, I've got that record that Martin made right sticking right over there.
It's fantastic.
It's a great record.
Fantastic. And the cast members, so to speak. Like, damn. All right.
Yep. Yeah, we just had Mark on twice here recently. Nice. Yeah. We won't talk about the first time. We learned what a record button was at that point.
Well, first now, for the record, Christopher, we had 350 something successful recordings before I fucked it up the first time.
Doesn't matter.
He's just confessing. We never even brought up who was responsible.
Yeah. We just didn't record that night.
Yeah. Anyway, we didn't record that night. Anyway. It was really good too. We had a great conversation. It was like an hour and 10 minutes or something like that. And then he's like, okay, we're done. He hits the button and it's like, you are recording. What?
It's like, oops.
That's why you push record and then crack the beer.
Yeah. You notice we had, before we started tonight, you were now recording. So now we all make sure that we get that. Yeah, he's it.
Yeah.
Zero beer.
That was, you said that was with Mark or Martin?
Martin. Martin. Okay. That was with Martin. Yeah. He said Mark, Martin. But he meant Martin.
I meant Martin, yeah. That's what we had.
It's like, yeah, I can imagine how well that would have gone over with Tornillo.
No.
Tornillo.
Exactly.
He'd have been like, so, what? No, sorry, bro. Uh-uh.
You're done. Have a nice day. Check.
So I don't know where you want to start, Christopher. Like I said, you got so many irons in the fire, but I'm just going to throw this one out first.
Yes.
I have that. I bought this from Nuclear Blast Records. This is a strictly limited clear black marbled vinyl, limited to 1,000 copies. Yep. What a great album this is.
Now, for the people who don't have YouTube.
Yes. I always forget that. This is Elegant Weapons, Horns for a Halo. There we go.
Yes. Came out March 26th, I think was the date, wasn't it?
I don't know for sure. Probably.
It didn't sound like 2003.
No, it is 2003.
Album.
I don't know. I got it at some point.
This anyway. Album is being released. No.
So Christopher, how did this become about? Who contacted you and how did this project become?
That band is the brainchild of Sir Richard Faulkner, of Judas Priest. Well, he's not actually knighted, but you know. It was something he'd been kicking around since about 2011. And initially it was always supposed to be a band with Richie and Scott Travis. They were going to do a thing. The whole idea was, you know, at the time Priest were doing the Epitaph tour, the farewell thing. And lo and behold, Richie kind of injected some new blood into the whole thing. And they decided, well, hell, this is a great lineup. Why not keep going? Anyway, but it was the whole idea of, well, the band's going to end at some point. All bands do. Mm-hmm. You know, that's just how life is. And then what do you do after that? So it was, okay, well, he started writing some tunes and it was going to be him and Scott, and then they would fill out the rest of the band around that. During COVID, like late COVID, I think it was probably December of 2020. It was right after he moved to Nashville. He contacted me about playing on the demos. I said, yeah, sure. Absolutely. Let's do it. Cause Richie and I have been buds since 2015. We met in South America, except did some shows with Priest, some of my first gigs. And he and I got, you know, acquainted and became close friends after that. So he hit me up. I live half an hour away. I think Scott was still in Virginia. He lives in Nashville now as well. But anyway, so Richie reached out. I went down, played on the demos, and that was it. And they sent off the record. Scott cut some of the stuff on there. I'm not sure what all he did and what I'm all on. That's why if you look at the liner notes, it says additional drums by me. But so it's both of us on the record. And then when touring came time, we had some dates that were offered to us. And, you know, Richie called me. Scott wasn't really too into it. And Rex Brown played bass on the record. But we already knew that the Pantera thing was going to happen. So Richie reached out to Dave Rimmer, who's the bass player for Uriah Heep. And he and Richie go back 20 years, maybe something like that. They go back a long ways. Old bandmates that came up playing in pubs together. So Davey was going to be the bass player. And then they found Ronnie Romero and he sang on the record and rounded it out. And we went out and toured it this past summer. Fantastic audience response. Ironically, we did a handful of shows with Pantera.
Wow.
Their European headline tour and a handful of festival dates that they were on. So it was great, man. We went out, we did shows with Kiss, Motley and Def Leppard, Pantera, ton of bands on the big European festivals. And it was very well received. This past March, we recorded before the first album even came out. We recorded drums for the next album. So maybe in 2025, we might have another Elegant Weapons and tour in the works. So we'll see.
That's cool.
You know, it's been a blast. I love the guys in the band. We had a ball. The music's killer.
Music is really, really good. Yeah, it's good. It's a lot of fun. It's heavy duty.
Thank you.
Really good.
Yeah, man. It's cool. That was definitely a big highlight of the year. That one and the wedding.
Yeah, I sent Bill and Alan. There was a festival. It was the Rock Imperium Festival in 2023. It was on YouTube. Sent it to them. Where was that at? Where that was at? Yeah, it was an outdoor anyway, but it's a festival. It's a good video though.
And people will ask sometimes, oh, do you remember this or that? if there are specific things, or you know, if there's something to jog my memory, like, oh, it's that venue that looks like a ship, or so I don't know.
Right.
You know, if there's something like that, or oh, that was the one where we set off the smoke alarms and sprinkling, you know, if it's something to jog my, all of which has happened before. Like, it is rock and roll.
Exactly. But
other than that, especially the big shows, it all kind of becomes a blur of one giant concert. And I have to go, oh, who was on the bill? Oh, that's right. And then da-da-da, and then it all comes back to me.
Gotcha.
But locations, I have no idea.
So right now you guys are not playing anywhere. You're just kind of that's kind of sitting, I guess. He's with Priest now. I guess they're doing their tour right now. So
all of us
busy.
Ronnie is out with his solo band. He either has a new record coming out or just put one out. I think I know he's touring with his band. I'm pretty sure Heap has a record coming out this year. Except has a record coming out. The Priest album will be out. So the timing was perfect last year where we all had a break for about 6 or 8 months and let's go do this. So right. It was great. That's really cool. Why I'm thinking we talked about it a couple days ago. Actually, it was Richie's birthday. And we're saying, yeah, maybe in 25 we'll do it because then the record's 2 years old. A lot of the touring will probably be out of the way for the new record. So I don't know. We'll see. Don't hold me to that, but hopefully, because I miss playing with those dudes. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah. It looked like, I was looking at the live stuff. It looks like you guys are having a really good time. You guys all gel. How's that?
You know, the accept thing is awesome. And everybody with their own respective gigs, we all love and have a blast doing those, but this was that excitement of something new, you know, and we're all friends anyway. That's kind of how the thing started. You know, when the phone calls started going around was, you know, well, you played drums on the record and we get along great. Do you want to do the tour? And you know, Davey, so why not?
Well, it takes the place of a long time ago, right? When you're putting a band together and you got all these egos that end up coming out and that like kind of stuff. And you guys have been around and done stuff for a while. And it isn't like that is the main focus, right? Is the ego. It's really just about having a good time and putting out a good product and you know, playing.
That's it. It didn't matter to us if we were headlining our own show, if we were direct support in an arena, if we were second or third down on a festival, it doesn't matter. As long as there's people and we get to play, let's just have fun. You know, that was what it was all about. It was great fun, man.
Yeah, That's really cool. So getting to Accept, Bill and I went down. Actually, I saw Accept for the first time in 1984, open for Kiss. Then I saw Accept open for Iron Maiden during the Power Slave tour. And then I never got to see Accept. And then once I met you years ago at the Rockin' Pod, that's been eons ago, you know, I was like, man, I want to see you guys play. And everybody, you know, and just never You guys have never, you know, when you came to the States for select dates, never could do it. Well, then you were at the Brooklyn Bowl for the beginning of that last tour, and Bill and I got to go down and see that, and it was spectacular. I was so happy. It was like we were there doing this, and woo.
And that's
great time.
That's the first night of the tour. That's when stuff usually goes wrong, and it didn't. I think I had a cymbal arm that was kind of doing one of these on that crazy ass rack system, but we got it sorted.
No, I thought it was a good show. You had some great openers that night. We met some nice people that night. Mm-hmm. You guys opening up for you, but I like that venue. The venue's really cool. And then, like I said, you come out and it was just like sonically, it sounded great. And I was like, yes, I get to see him again. It's, you know, it was a 30 year span in between seeing, but, and then I could see you play too. Cause that's the first time I ever got to see you play also.
So, oh, rad.
After knowing you for how many years, you know, I think you maybe played one of the residencies. I think one time when we were down there, I was thinking
y'all had
played in Blondie in Hell.
That's right. I forgot that. And I got pictures of us that night. We went down for Alan and I went down to see that last Blonder than Hell show.
Yeah. That would have been 2017.
That was in 17. Yeah.
Yeah.
17. Yeah.
At the end, at the exit in. Yeah. That was a fun night. But anyway.
Missed those gigs. Those were fun.
That was just an extraordinary night. You know, we were sitting there and then like Lizzie Hale comes in and she's like, oh, hi, how you doing? You know, I was like, met her and just, it was just a great, great night that night. I thought we were going to be in and out and it's like, we had to drive home that night. It was a rough drive home.
The next day or something, right?
Yeah, I did. I worked the next day. It was a rough day.
And move.
So anyway, with you guys, I think you mentioned on Facebook that you guys have been in the studio already working on some new stuff.
Yeah. As far as I know, I think it's going to be a spring release. I haven't seen a release date yet.
Gotcha.
But the record's done. We shot two music videos in December.
Cool.
Photo shoots and stuff. All that coincided with a couple of shows over in Europe. So we were able to get that knocked out because there's six of us. So it's hard to get everybody in the same place.
I like how you all were advertising it was at an undisclosed location.
Yeah.
I was entertained by all of that. I enjoy that kind of, toying with the fans, you know, because we all had a good time. We knew you guys were having a good time. We could really tell.
It was in Poland, and it was cold. It wasn't as cold as it has been when I've been to Poland, but it was cold. Yeah, we were in Wrocław, Poland, for a few days doing photos and video shoots. There was one of the videos is, well, I don't know if I'm allowed to say. I'll just say it's awesome.
There you go.
both videos look great. One of them, you know, there's a bunch of pyro and stuff, and
right
is even cooler. But that, you know, those two locations were specifically chosen for the look of these videos with the team. So
that's cool. No, that's
awesome. I was watching when the guys were, you know, because for those who don't know, usually when you do a music video, you know, everybody's set up all together. You do, I don't know, 10 or 15 takes of the song. And it might just be this one section and this and that. And then eventually everybody disappears and it's okay, just drums. You do one or two playthroughs by yourself. So the camera's moving around. That's how you get all the close-up shots without a camera being in the background of somebody else's, for those that don't know. But and then everybody does their individual shots. What's cool about it is you can step back, you know, out of frame, and there's usually a video monitor where you can see what the lens is actually shooting with the lighting treatment and all the different settings in the camera. These two videos are going to look awesome. I'm excited for everybody to see them.
Cool. That is cool.
We have to wait till spring, you said?
No, I think the first video is late February.
Oh, and cool.
The second one is probably late March.
Yeah, so it'll get us prepped for spring.
Yeah.
Well, when they got...
If you look at, you know, acceptworldwide.com and all the social medias, Accept Worldwide or Accept the Band, I'm sure there will be a major blast from them and the record label and stuff about the release dates.
One thing I like about Accept is, I mean, they have a formula and it works. And I just enjoy getting new music from you guys. Cause like I said, it's something that we've liked for, I mean, it works, you know. I know that it doesn't go too much from what it was before.
Yeah, man.
That's awesome.
This record's cool. I think you're going to dig it. There's, you know, your big anthems and the drum stuff's cool. I'll say that.
I know the drummer too. He's really cool.
You know, there's the classic grooves and stuff just because of the way that the songs are written, and that's a feel. And I mean, most music anyway, it's however many beats for rock and roll anyway. Look at Phil Rudd, you know. But it's a killer record. There's some cool drum stuff, the guitar parts, vocals, everything. I think you're going to dig it.
Cool. Yeah, I'm sure it'll be really cool.
You'll have to pick that up too.
Another record we have to buy.
Oh, one more.
Oh, I love that. I love new vinyl. I need some new vinyl.
You should see mine. I've got about half of a record crate's worth of albums and no record crate. Because we... I have a few crates stacked up with a tabletop, and then the record system is on top of that and everything. But it's even numbers. So if I can't just add one crate, or it's going to be like that. Yeah. I'm not ready to put a half a crate and then a completely empty one. So I guess I'll just have to go buy more records.
You say, honey, I'm sorry, but I got to go record shopping today.
I got one that is.
It's my OCD. I got to keep this crap. I got to keep it even. Yeah.
That's just.
Yeah, it's got 12. It's got 12 slots, 12 boxes, basically.
Nice.
So, you know, I've filled it with some other paraphernalia, but for the most part, it's all albums.
What was I watching the other day? It was a movie, and the guy had that kind of like, I'm like you, I have that thought, but he had a whole wall full.
Oh my gosh, yeah. And I've seen people like that. It's crazy.
It was on some movie we were, I don't remember what movie it was.
There's a guy.
Oh, it was that crazy movie where that, with Julia Roberts, this recent one, like it's like the end of the world, but they go into his house and he has this listening room, and it's like, and I told Kelly, I was like, that's like 5,000 records.
Sure.
I could count them. Like, I know.
What do you prefer to listen to music on? Do you prefer to listen to vinyl, or?
I like listening to vinyl. Yeah. It's, you know, the whole thing. Cause I grew up, I am younger, but I caught the tail end of LPs and cassettes and everything. And I remember just walking up to the record crate and like, oh, well, let's just pull one of these. Oh, who's this by? Who's on it? Wow, this is, you could hold it. And then eventually with CDs, even it was, you know, you could still, and nowadays I hear records that I love and I'm like, man, the producer's great on this. Who produced it? And I have no idea. I mean, I could look on All Music, but by the time the thought's passed, you know, it's gone.
There is something about having that tangible thing, you know, that you can... You know, the liner notes and the lyrics and the you know,
all the time that stuff.
We're just old school, Bill. We're weaning on it. That's what we do. So
we have all the little, you know, Alexas throughout the house.
Sure.
It's a speaker system. You know, and if we're cooking, we'll do that. But a lot of times if we're just hanging out, Ainsley calls it a lucky dip. You just go up to one of the record crates and just grab pull a something. Record, pull it out, whatever it is, you got to listen to it.
Yeah.
You know, and we'll have album nights where there will be 10, 12 albums stacked up. And that's cool.
I'd rather do that than watch TV any day.
Well, that's it. That's the coolest part is the TV's not on, you know, or you're not in your phone listening to music. You're hanging out like human beings. Remember when we did that?
Yeah. The only problem with it now is with the new, with some of the new music, they make like the, or if you buy a older record that they've remastered or whatever, or done something with, you know, they've taken it and stretched it out to where it's two albums. Mm-hmm. Instead of just being one, so now you have to get up like every three songs and This is two albums.
Yeah.
How many songs though?
Three songs per side.
Three songs per side.
So you're going to be you're switching.
So you got it.
But the
that's exercise though. You get some exercise.
Yeah. You get to touch the vinyl more.
The only downside of that, well, the two downsides of that is one, if you don't have a hi-fi system, you're not really going to hear the difference.
Sure.
In your vinyl remastered, all that stuff.
Right.
And it jacks the price up.
Yep.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I mean, it's great. It's sturdy because you don't got to worry about it warping.
Yeah.
But
I know people that have them and they got them on these little Crosley and these little, Alan's got one, didn't he?
Yeah. Yep.
But you know what? My Kiss Alive album.
The only reason that I keep it is because the guy that gave it to me was a good friend of the family, and he passed away recently, and I just can't make myself get rid of it.
But what I'm saying is, I know people that have a record collection, and that's all they have to listen to records on. I'm like, dude, you know, I did that when I got my Kiss Alive. I had this one speaker, little plastic, you know, Tupperware looking record player with the shittiest needle ever.
You had to put two nickels on to get it to give you any, not skip, and to give you any sound at all.
But I think mine was a little Panasonic record player, and the speaker boxes were about that big.
Yep.
And no, I'm gonna tell you what, I wore out Kiss Destroyer on that thing.
Tell you what, my brother and I wore out my mom's copy of the Woodstock album.
Right.
Oh. And it wasn't because we listened to it so much. Because we were scratching the turntable and we snapped the needle.
Oh my God.
And it was, I don't remember what kind of table it was. You know, it was hers from the 60s.
Right.
And this was back in the early 90s. So good luck finding a cartridge for a 60s record player at that point in time.
Yeah.
I mean, we had that, like I said, I had that little bitty tabletop when, and then of course my parents had the big console. You know, the thing was 9 feet long
and
the lid was 300 pounds to get it up, you know.
Solid mahogany.
And it had like speakers about this big around it.
Yep.
I still have my, well, not my original one, but the one I got in like 86, I guess it was.
Yeah.
So I still have that turntable. I don't have the same amp or anything, but definitely have the same turntable, which is kind of cool. And speakers.
Christopher, getting back to you real quick. You also, you're a woodworking dabbler, or I guess you have a woodworking shop. I see you doing stuff on Facebook, and I'm curious what you do with that and what you make and everything else. So
all kinds of stuff. My father played harmonica, and a few other instruments, but, his main day job, he was an architect. He was a draftsman. And an amateur carpenter. So he used to, you know, he'd build stuff like my bunk beds. I don't know if you've seen that snare drum or not, but my father built my brother and I a custom set of bunk beds. And it's either pine or spruce. They're very, very similar look to them. And I can't tell, but what he did was he made the top bunk extra tall and made the bottom bunk low. So my brother and I could jump on the bed without, you know, hitting our heads on it.
Sure.
And then at some point my brother and I, we'd put on, you know, albums or tapes or something of like Slaughter. And I had this broken cymbal that we would hang from the top bunk on a jumping, like a jump rope. And that was my hanging cymbal. That was the drum cage like Los Elias had, you know. But anyway, so I kept a few pieces of the bunk bed as it deteriorated. That was my first drum riser. actually turned the bunk beds into my first drummer.
Oh, wow.
Mom's basement. And but I kept a few boards out of that, took measurements of everything else that I could. So maybe in the future I'll rebuild it for our children. But a friend of mine in Asheville turned those boards into a snare drum for me.
Wow.
Jeff Hankin over at Carolina Drumworks. But anyway, so he passed down a lot of what he knew as far as carpentry and design and all that stuff to my Uncle Lee. And when my father passed, my Uncle Lee would get me involved in his home improvement projects. I'd go over for spring break or hang out for a weekend and learn how to relocate outlet boxes or add additional outlets. Well, if you can get in the attic space, you do it this way. If not, you could take off the baseboard and, you know, just future DIY stuff that I might need. Mm-hmm. And I always loved watching New Yankee Workshop on PBS and eventually TLC Network on cable. You know, they would have Home Time and shows like that, Home Improvement. And I always just loved it and was intrigued by it. And, you know, so Lee would get me involved. I think I built my first deck when I was 12 or 13 years old, you know, and helped him build an awning off of his garage for this old Jeep Commando he had and put in a lift system. So he, because it was a hard top, but it could be unbolted.
Mm-hmm.
So all kind of stuff like that. The building blocks that I grew up playing with, as it turns out, were actually just offcuts from my dad's projects. It's just 2x4 and 2x6 offcuts, you know, but I loved the idea of starting with just a blank material from nature and shaping it into something else, and then just kind of went wild with it. And I think it was 21. Yeah, 2021. My Uncle Lee, the same gentleman that taught me everything, he and his wife retired and decided they were moving down to Florida. So I inherited all of his woodworking equipment and then invested into some of my own as well, had the space to set it up. So it's always something that I've done in the background, just as a hobby or home repair or building little things like a recording desk or a rack for recording equipment, you know, but it's turned into a custom business slowly. And what's odd is once business started really going, touring picked up again.
Of course.
And there was about 2 years of not doing it because I was gone all the time. And we moved in here into this house in December of 22. Yeah, December of 22. And I just said, all right, half the garage is mine. The other half will be storage. And we made the deal that, okay, after the wedding, because we've got so much to plan for and so much to do, and you're still touring in between there, after the wedding, go for it. I think a week or two after the honeymoon, I got a saw stop cabinet saw back in March of last year. And a week or two after the honeymoon, I came home and one day just finally cut the box open. It's like, all right, let's do this. It's time. Let's go. So, yeah. So I've just been making custom pieces, tweaking the shop since then. I love it because, like I said, you can create something from nothing that came from nature, and it's something as little as a wooden spoon that, you know, your in-law uses at every meal, like salad spoons or something, or it could be a piece that stays with your family for generations.
Right.
You know, but having a part in that and to be able to shut off music completely, because music consumes so much of my life, just naturally being a musician, and that's my life. It's That's what I do. That's what I think about all the time. That it's nice to have something that can be related to music, you know, whether it's being a luthier, if you choose that path, you know, making guitars and things. Right. I could go out and build a stave or segment snare drum if I wanted to. Building furniture for a studio baffles, you know, or it can be something completely non-related to music. And I love that.
Yeah, that's good.
It's cool.
You know, it's good.
My dad, when he retired, he did the same thing. You know, he started out building real, I mean, not, I don't want to say crude, but he was making like these pie safes and these dry sinks. I don't know if you know what that is, you know, and yeah. Building stuff like that. And it was kind of country looking stuff, but then he got into making my desk that I have right now. He's built my bed, my dresser. We have 3 or 4 pie safes. I mean, he got to the point where, he quit that. He's 81 years old now, and he kind of got too much for him too at that point.
Yeah.
But the thing was, I wish I had that. I don't have that patience. I don't, you know, he would, you know, glue stuff together, and then he had a planer, and he could wait for it to dry. And I'd be like sitting there going, let's just plane this shit. Let's get it done. I want to get stuff done, and I can't do it.
That is the hardest part about it. When you really first, especially like you mentioned the planer and stuff, when you get into milling up your own lumber,
mm-hmm.
That's fine and dandy. But when you come home from the lumber yard and now you got to throw it on your lumber rack and wait for it to acclimate, could be a couple days, could be a month.
Right.
You know, and that's one of the things too with customers that I have to let them know beforehand. You know, if I'm going shopping for lumber, it might take a minute before I can actually start on the project. And here's why. Because wood, even a finished table, it's still breathing, you know, as the weather and as temperatures fluctuate, moisture levels and all that, the wood swells, it shrinks, it might want to twist or cup, you know. So these are all things that you got to take into consideration with the raw materials before you even start forming and shaping them.
Yeah. Dad had a friend that had a drying, he had a whole barn where he did his own wood. But the first table he built us, he learned over time he put the wood together, glued this whole top together, then put another piece of wood the other direction and glued it on there. So it was our wedding present. Well, and we were asleep one night, and it sounded like a gun went off, like a shotgun. We went down, and the middle had cracked, and it cracked. It gets to the dry air in the house, and that top had cracked on itself finally. But when it gave away, I mean, it sounded like an explosion.
Yep.
So he made us another table after that. He learned a lesson.
We had somebody gave us a really nice olive wood spatula, I say maybe a year ago, and I love this thing because every now and then I'll freshen it up. Every 4 months or so I'll freshen it with just a little bit of mineral oil with beeswax in there when it starts looking really, really dry, and it brings it back to life, and it's so figured, it's gorgeous. And we had a, you know, the day after Christmas, English folk will know it, or anybody in the colony, or Boxing Day. It's a holiday where it's basically Christmas with everybody that's not your immediate family. You know, your friends come over, bring a dish, whatever. And we were cleaning up from Boxing Day. Somebody put all the wooden servers in the dishwasher.
No.
Oh. And they all survived, but the olive wood came out and there's cracks and shit. I'm going, I can fix this. I have, you know,
I have tools.
I have the proper materials and everything to glue it back together and color it and make it so it's invisible and looks like it's part of the wood grain. But It's just like, oh my God.
That's sad.
That's and I learned that the hard way years ago. A roommate of mine had this beautiful ingrain cutting board. And for those of you who don't know, imagine a butcher's block where right. when you're looking at the cutting board, you see all the curve of the wood. That's ingrain. That's right. done. You do it in that way because it's easier on your knife and it's easier on the cutting board too. Wood, especially on the ends, imagine it's fibrous. So the knife comes in and it pulls out of the way and then comes back together. They're pain in the butt to make. They're expensive. And I ran his through the dishwasher and blew it. And I didn't even think about it when I did it because it was a drunken, stupid night of two bottles of wine and cooking and, oh, screw it, dishwasher. Yeah. Next day, it's in pieces. I glued it back together for him, but I had to sand off the old glue, glue it back up, put parallel clamps, sand it, refinish. It sucked. It sucked so bad.
Wow.
So never put your wooden cookware in the dishwasher.
Never. No handles, no knives with wooden handles, nothing. Don't ever put wood in there.
Put your decent knives in the dishwasher.
Yeah, and it definitely
leaks the steel. It's not good for it. So,
all right, Christopher. Anything? What's coming up next? What do you got coming up? Big time for you.
Handful of stuff. So, except we'll be busy this year.
Okay.
You know, new record coming out. So we're gonna do. We've got Monsters of Rock cruise at the beginning of March. In May, the front half of May, we go to South America. June, July, I think August even. Well, yeah, August. European summer festivals. Possibly after that, a run in the States.
That would be awesome.
I think I saw one show, and I know we had a big powwow about it back in December. So I think they're going to try and do a U.S. tour, early fall, late summer, technically.
Love that.
And then European tour, you know, full headlining tour in the fall with the new record. And February 10th, we're doing the Prince tribute show with Todd Zilla's Big
Time. Oh, I saw that too on Facebook. You guys have done that before, haven't you?
We've done two of them. It's been 3 years since the last one.
Gotcha.
And the last one was actually as a fundraiser to save the Exit Inn, but it was during COVID. So we actually filmed it and then did a stream of it. And all the proceeds from the stream went to the club to help save it.
You said that February 10th?
That's February a Saturday. 10th.
What's that?
February 10th.
Okay, yes. That's a Saturday night. I'm going to try to do that.
Eastside Bowl in Nashville. Eastside Bowl.
Okay.
So if you've ever been to Cannery Ballroom, Mercy Lounge, that complex, Chark Kinselving designed those rooms, and he's done the same thing. He's done it at a handful of different venues. I think he was involved with Basement East too, actually.
Okay.
Which sounds killer in there. But he bought an old Kmart and turned it into a 20 or 24 lane bowling alley. That's all rock and roll. There's a diner in there, and the colors of the diner, and you know, whether it's the paint on the wall or the old school puffy vinyl seats, you know, the benches, all that, he got permission from Gibson. He got their color codes for a 50s gold top.
How cool.
It all matches it. The red is the mahogany color. He's got the cream of the plastic and obviously the gold. So it's decked out. And you remember the old school 70s blacklight posters. If you hit them, it's a certain strobe you can hit it with, and it looks like the pictures are moving. He has those sitting over booths in the bar area. And then there's a full-on music venue in the back too. So obviously we're doing the Prince show in the music venue.
Cool. But, yeah, that's pretty cool. That's a cool place. I've been there. I went Bill's to the the Rockin' Pod show. They had, I think they had that there this year or last year. It was really cool. The venue's really cool. So diner's cool. Yeah.
So there's the big stage on the long end of the room, and then there's like a smaller stage to the left if you're looking at the stage. We're taking up both of those.
Oh, nice. Wow.
Live band on the stage. We have a team of aerialists and dancers that are going to be between the stage and on there and hanging flying rigs and fabrics. And imagine a crazy circus to the music of Prince, and you can pretty much do anything you want. Like,
pretty much.
It's great. And
it's pretty cool.
The drum set is a pain in the ass, but I love doing it because I'm a nerd. Everything is triggered. It's all mic'd too, so you're getting a blend of that. But what I've done over the last several years of doing these is I've found isolated tracks from Prince albums, or I've gotten as close as I could to the sample and built my own around that. So what you're hearing out at front of house, you'll hear all the little snippets or talking bits that are in the songs, sound effects, that horn screech here or there. And it sounds like the loops with live drums, but there's no actual playback of a loop or a drum machine. It's me. So
we have to go to that.
To give you an example, it's a ridiculous drum set. There's five pedals.
February 10th.
February.
Bill's doing the same thing.
It's nutty. There are five pedals on that drum set. There's four electronic pedals and then the regular hi-hat pedal. Six, if you include switching between the kits.
All right. Wow.
The average show that we do is between 30 and 35 drum sets.
Wow. You
know, if we do a mashup of two songs, well, that's two different kits.
Two kits, right.
So halfway through that tune, you got to hit a pad to switch or hit this other pedal, and it's insane, but it's a lot of fun and it's really cool to do. So I'm looking forward to that one. February 10th, Eastside Bowl. Tickets online at eastsidebowl.com.
There you go.
We need to write that down.
All right. It's then, written down. It's on there. So I have to figure out how to get there. And then I gotta figure out someplace closer to stay around there, though.
Yeah.
What's your address? No, I'm kidding.
Yeah. You got that house.
We'll sleep in your wood shop. We got a garage. I'll sleep by the saw.
I'll turn on the air filter for you.
You build me a bed.
We'll put the respirator on you, and I'll turn on the air filter. So you'll only get half the sawdust in your lungs.
There you go.
And then, of course, always working with Ainsley on material for her records.
Cool.
You know, like I mentioned earlier, we've got a session tonight for one of our clients. And then I think later in the week, we're going to be doing some of her cuts.
Well, let us know when Ainsley is ready and we'll have her on the show.
Yeah,
absolutely. Absolutely.
Love to do it.
As a wedding gift, you know, as a thank you to everybody that came out, she released a single and then put it out online called Heartbeats. So you can find that iTunes, Spotify, Amazon Music, whatever your preferred listening platform is.
Ainsley. Yeah. Okay.
Ainsley. Ainsley. Heartbeats. Okay.
We will look. I'll look that up as soon as we're off here.
And I play drums on that one.
Wow. We'll be listening to it. Going, you got that drum?
How'd you get that game?
Actually, how'd I get that? And Kurt Lowney from Cotto and The Scent. Our friend Kurt engineered it and produced the track.
So, right on.
Yeah. And mixed and mastered and all that fun stuff.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, Christopher, we will. We know you've got some tracking and recording to do, so we will let you get on your way. People visit us at agesofrock.com. You know, the social media links and the past episodes are there. And until next time, peace out.
Thanks for listening to the Ages of Rock podcast. If you haven't done so already, be sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel, like us on Facebook, and most importantly, tell all your friends. Remember, you're never too old to rock. Until the next episode, peace out, folks.